Welcome to Box Office Battle, where we take underappreciated films, forgotten classics, and something else.
Whatever the third one is.
Underrated.
I'm Biggs.
I'm the Beard.
I'm Zach.
So today we are doing dark Robin Williams children movies. Brandon is doing Shakes the Clown. Zach is doing
Death to Smoochie.
We did a arm wrestling match before the show started, and Brandon was the victor, so he will go first.
Yeah, I decided to take the ball and start out strong.
That's right.
None of this deferring to the second half anymore. Anyway, so got the 1991 movie directed by Bobcat Goldthwait, starring Bobcat Goldthwait as Shakes the Clown. It starts out with Bobcat Goldthwait waking up by being pissed on by a young kid.
Like right on his head, right?
Yeah, like, well, he's like passed out in front of the toilet. So the kid goes in, starts taking a leak, and like Bobcat Goldthwait wakes up in midstream.
And he doesn't stop.
No, the kid's already going.
Now, who's the kid's mother who Shakes the Clown had just banged?
Yeah, and she's the damsel in distress throughout the rest of the movie.
So who is it?
Julie.
Oh, you really don't know this? No, the mom at the beginning in her bra and in her underwear?
I don't remember.
Dude, it's Carol Brady. It's the mom in the Brady
Bunch, dude.
It's a story
of a lovely lady.
You didn't make that?
It's no.
Florence Henderson, man.
No.
Or is that her name? It's dude, it is the lady from the Brady Bunch. They made a big deal when that movie came out.
No, I didn't make that connection.
Oh, you didn't get forced to watch the Brady Bunch like I did.
Nope.
They went to Hawaii. They had all kinds of adventures.
And it was Florence Henderson.
Yeah.
She's credited as the unknown woman.
Yeah.
Cousin Oliver was there, and I learned hate for the first time.
So he goes and he performs at a couple children's parties. Actually, fairly talented as a clown, does pretty good. His main drawback is he's a raging alcoholic. Goes to the bar afterwards with Adam Sandler and the other guy from a lot of Adam Sandler movies. Gruff guy.
The guy with the weird eye and the water boy. Is that the guy you're talking about?
Yeah, he's got the real thick Cajun accent. You can't really...
Oh, that guy. Okay. Isn't the bar they're at like the Twisted Balloon or something like that?
Something along those lines.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the main story, one of the guys on TV, the clown on TV, which doesn't really hold up because you don't have that clown on TV anymore for children's afternoon programming.
Right, like Bozo or...
Basically, our Krusty the Clown is modeled after that kind of
Yeah,
character.
We had Rambling Rod when I was a kid in Portland.
I can't remember the one. There used to be one on the Denver channel and I
can't
remember.
Isn't that crazy? Everybody had one for our age and older. Like the clown who introduced cartoons.
Yeah, and it just doesn't happen anymore.
Well, even in The Simpsons, he's more of a Tonight Show host now than he is like a children's cartoon person.
Yeah, I feel like they're really shoehorning Krusty the Clown in a lot of stuff now.
They always have.
Anyway, he's retired or being forced out. He's playing it off like a retirement, and they want to know who's going to be replacing him, and Shakes the Clown is up for his spot, but it's actually taken by Binky the Clown, played by Tom Kenny.
Oh, SpongeBob.
Pre-SpongeBob, Tom Kenny. Yeah. Pre-Mr. Show, Tom Kenny.
Yeah, he did Mr. Show in the mid-90s, I think. Like around OJ. OJ's big thing.
The incident?
That thing?
Yeah, that whole thing. That whole thing with the Bronco. You know what I'm talking about.
You know the one.
Not John Elway.
No, not that slow white Bronco. A different one. You like how I recycled jokes from 1995?
Yep.
Hey, guess what? They're almost 20 years old now. That just means they're classic.
That's right.
Tom Kenny is, his main vice is cocaine, which is he gets supplied by the rodeo clowns, which are the big badasses of the clown world. There's basically three levels of clowns in this movie. There's the rodeo clown, which are the badass because they, you know, fight bulls all day long. You know, go punch women and drink beer afterwards. I don't know. I made up that punch women thing.
They're basically the redneck clowns, right?
Right. And then you have the performance clowns, the ones that do children's shows and that sort of thing. And then you have the lowest level being the mimes. They're driving around drunk. They see a bunch of mimes performing in the park. They go and harass them, beat them up a little bit, drive off, have a real drunken montage after that. And Shakes gets told by his boss that he needs to sober up or he's getting shit canned. He finds out that he needs to sober up. He actually goes sober for a day, like middle of a performance, and the kids like raids the liquor cabinet, drinks an entire like half gallon, the party jug of 10 high. Just belligerent drunk at this point.
Wait, from drinking an action jug of 10 high?
The action jug.
By the way, we're borrowing that from Dub Campbell, the We Had a Good Life podcast. As far as I know, he named it an action jug.
It's definitely Dub that named that.
Yeah. I'm just giving it credit. I don't care.
Yeah. I actually have informed a few bartenders what the real name of that is now.
What is it?
The action jug.
Oh, what do they call it?
Oh, it was just the half gallon. Yeah. No, that's the action jug.
That's right. You're always getting into some action if you drink an action jug.
So he goes belligerent back to the twisted balloon, passes out in the office. The boss finds out, shit cans him, feels bad about it a little bit later, goes into the office. Tom Kenny's getting his fix from the rodeo clowns. He's all hyped up on cocaine. The boss walks in on the whole thing. Tom Kenny kills the boss. Meanwhile, Shakes the Clown is passed out drunk on the floor beneath them. Wakes up, the boss is dead. Everybody thinks he killed him.
SpongeBob?
No.
Pre-SpongeBob?
Pre-SpongeBob. No, they think that Shakes the Clown killed the boss.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
In a drunken stupor. He goes to the mime school, and the head mime is Robin Williams, who is just a belligerent asshole.
The most verbose mime I think I've ever seen, too.
And Tom Kenny, he goes and tries to take the girlfriend and Shakes the Clown, ends up stealing her because told her too much that he actually had killed the boss. Shakes goes after him, saves the day. All being filmed on TV. Tom Kenny's throwing knives at her, like, on live TV. It got really dark toward the end, but Shakes the Clown saves the day.
Wonderful. Death to Smoochie. Now, why would anyone want to kill someone as adorable as to be named Smoochie? Here's why. We open on a children's television program. Smiling, dancing, laughing youths scattered about a set. While a man in a pure white suit with a technicolor dream coat prances about and tap dances. That man is Robin Williams. And his name is Rainbow Randolph.
Oh, you know what? I said earlier that the clown that I watched is Ramblin', or I think I said Rainbow Rob or something. Uh-huh. It was Ramblin' Rod.
Okay.
I think I got mixed up because you're saying that, but that's really fucked up now that I think about that. Because we know what a ramblin' man does. And his name is Rod?
Mm.
That's not okay. Mm-mm, that belongs in the conversation of these movies.
We all just need to acknowledge and accept that weird, weird name.
He had lots of buttons on his jacket, and kids would show up and pin buttons on his jacket during the show. They only had space for buttons down below by the waist. It's a little crazy now that I think about it.
You know, there's some red flags you might have missed along the way.
I don't even want to know what happened on commercial breaks.
Oh, God.
So what happened on commercial breaks with Rainbow?
Well, it's not a commercial break so much as a history of being a corrupt a-hole. You see, Rainbow Randolph has a habit of accepting bribes in exchange for your child to be on the show in a prime spot. An FBI sting captures him, and he is disgraced and fired. And so the network does the only thing they can do. They have to find someone to replace him, but they cannot risk this happening again. Oh yeah, by the way, these corrupt kids show hosts, there's a long litany in this film's universe of these corrupt children's television show hosts. So they want to find someone who's squeaky clean. Two-faced network executive John Stewart knows just the guy. Little man named Sheldon Mope, who performs out of the goodness of his heart at methadone clinics in elementary schools.
Because you know you want to find somebody squeaky clean, you go to a methadone clinic.
Yeah.
In a homemade pink fuzzy rhino suit as Smoochie.
Basically a football helmet with a horn glued on it.
Damn right. and a pink fat suit and some sweatpants. Sheldon Mopes, as portrayed by Edward Norton, is like a genuinely, sincerely sweet-hearted man. He only he's a vegan. He doesn't believe in violence. He genuinely believes. He has over 300 songs in the Smoochie songbook, and every single one of them has a good moral value. This is the kind of guy that seems pretend, but he's for real. And he is going to single-handedly change edutainment. And he takes over the show, and it sows some seeds of dislike. The hard-nosed producer, played by Catherine Keener, is constantly at odds with him. Our earlier mentioned Rainbow Randolph is not pleased to have lost his job and is embarking on a series of ways to try to murder him. Danny DeVito, as his hard-scrabble agent.
Who also
directs the film, yeah.
Which, like, you can't find two directors to compare better than Danny DeVito and Bobcat Goldthwait. Like, yep. They have a lot of common in their movies.
So he's got this weird corrupt agent. He has an unlikely friendship with the Irish mob. There's some ice skating involved. It's just a whole smorgasbord of everything you could ever want out of a black comedy about children's entertainment. And without giving anything away, it comes together in the type of climax you can't believe until you see it. Until you've seen an army of little people dressed as Nazi demons chasing Edward Norton in a pink in a pink rhino suit across an ice rink, you haven't lived.
Demon Nazi rhinos.
Yep. And they're all little people.
Doesn't Smoochie get into trouble at one point because they're trying to get him to do something with an ice skating show?
Yeah.
Because there's like some kind of mob thing going on?
No, there's a corrupt charity.
Oh, that's
that
right.
Is trying to get him to do
the Parade of Hope.
The Parade of Hope. And they want him to do the show so that they can take a big cut of the money.
They basically ran all the vendors.
Mm-hmm.
And part of what he was railing for is
he won't sell out.
No, he wants good, wholesome, quality food for these young children.
That's right. He wouldn't endorse this Smoochios. He wouldn't endorse Smoochie Cola. He was down with the Frisbee, but but he would not endorse any of that sugar water. He will have you know that cola has at least and no less than 2 addictive ingredients.
So how does it all end?
Well, it all comes together in an ice rink. John Stewart and Danny DeVito have hired another former television kids host, children's television host by the name of Bugs Ding Dong, who is now a heroin addict and thusly falls asleep often, to snipe him from the rafters of the garden as the Smoochie on Ice show is reaching its finale. Now, as you may, you're
gonna find this is just like The Godfather Part 3. Yeah.
Now, you're gonna find this hard to believe. Heroin addicts have a real hard time aiming rifles. Real hard time with it. Which thankfully buys enough time for Robin Williams. Oh, yes. Robin Williams, after a real heart-to-heart after trying to murder Catherine Keener and Edward Norton in their penthouse apartment, he realizes he's just depressed and he wants to be working with children again. He really did love giving entertainment to children. He goes out with the express purpose of saving Smoochie's life, and he does. He's able to tackle his assailant from the rafters and throw him down to the ice. And sadly, the assailant, Bugs Ding Dong, gets a shot off, and it does blow through Smoochie's head and pop his horn off. But thankfully, Edward Norton survives, and he and Catherine Keener get to make out in Times Square and live happily ever after. And as the credits begin to roll, we see a nice little moment of Smoochie's show airing. And Smoochie does some cool little pirouettes on the ice, and there's another pair of skates next to him, and they're spinning. And we pan up, and there's a white pants. We pan up, there's a white shirt, white tie, white vest, white hat. Technicolor Dreamcoat, you guys, Smoochie and Rainbow Randolph have teamed up to create the greatest children's television program in history.
I gotta admit, that's where I thought you were going.
To a Jackie Wilson song.
Damn right.
And I thought that's where you're going until you said Technicolor Dreamcoat, and then I was sure it was Kramer.
All right, so I'm gonna start off with Bobcat Goldthwait as a director, because I believe this one of his earliest, if not his earliest, film as a director.
I can't say for certain. I think it's his first, though.
But we really start to see some real chops as a director. A lot of the stuff, it's gritty where it needs to be, pretty where it needs to be. A lot of the shots work really well in this movie. And so, you know, there's some plot holes and a few things, but we really see him start to shine as a director.
On the director's tip, Danny DeVito similarly delivers in every way visually. The smartest thing he does is create a look for the film that's immediately familiar and feels lived in and comfortable to the audience by sort of shooting the film as though it's a 30s noir film. And he takes a lot of sort of that, the milieu of those films, as well as very specific shots, like the use of shadows to tower over people and shadows reflecting off blinds to cover characters' faces and having them coming in and out of corners and sort of meld into the background. He uses a lot of those old tricks to great effect, especially because of how well it juxtaposes those blues and purples and those dark, cool shades with the shadows, with the bright colors of the children's TV world, and how those two interact visually on screen makes for a pretty delightful treat for the eyes.
The one thing I really had to bring out was the tagline for Shakes the Clown: loved by children, desired by women, adored by bartenders everywhere.
How do you feel about unintentional comedy, Biggs?
I love it.
I thought so. Well, I have something that may I have something that may interest you in Death to Smoochie.
You already got me by that presentation.
Thank you. In this film, Jon Stewart has a very specific haircut. Do you remember Billy Bob Thornton's haircut in Fargo?
Yeah.
Jon Stewart has that haircut the entire movie.
It's funny because when you said Billy Bob Thornton, because Fargo was the last thing I saw with him, that was the haircut I picked.
Good, because that's what Jon Stewart has.
He doesn't really have hair.
At all. That's what Jon Stewart has this whole movie. It's just funny to look at. I don't know what else to tell you.
It's fantastic.
The other thing I really have to say about Shakes the Clown is it was a really one of the first times that they've, other than The Simpsons, really brought out the dark part of children's entertainment. This was the first full-length movie where we really got to see the dark side. And it really came to a culmination at the very end, like I said earlier, where Binky the Clown is throwing knives on the hostage woman's face. He made her up, like, in his apartment, held her down, colored her face like a clown, like duct taped over her face, and then like drew on this smile so that you wouldn't see it on television as he's throwing knives at her.
Ugh, good thing they didn't live in an HD world.
No, watching it on HD, you see a lot of this stuff. But 1991 on-air programming, nah. You're not seeing that. So it really broke some barriers at that point.
This is a credit to both actor and director. Robin Williams is used perfectly in this film because he's playing a character that is set up to allow him to do his sort of manic bouncing back and forth between the extremes of emotion and hyper-intense, exaggerated characters in a way that feels very natural and true to the story rather than being distracting. It also allows him to play straight comedy. It allows him to do family friendly. It allows him to do dark and fucked up. It allows him to do pathetic. Like, all these things that individually he mastered in his best work, he gets to bring all those disparate skills together for one role. And goddamn, does he ever knock it out of the park.
The last thing I'm going to have to say is this was one of the Adam Sandler performances I really like. It was like almost like his role in Airheads, where he's the lovable dumbass. I don't know how else to put it. The quiet cool, almost.
Okay, the quiet cool explains it more. When you said lovable dumbass, I'm like, isn't that him in every movie?
No, it's as far as his earlier comedies, the quiet cool, it was more that role where he goes up and talks to a waitress and just asks the time to pretend that he's actually hitting on a lady.
When you look at the performances of the titular characters in both these films, Bobcat Goldthwait does solid, strong work. He's no Ed Norton. He's just not. It's nobody's fault. It's nobody's fault. He's just not as good as Ed Norton because most people aren't as good as Ed Norton. And Ed Norton is firing on all cylinders in this movie. He's got this whole voice worked out for the character. He has a way of moving for the character, and he sticks to it the entire time. And it would be so easy for an actor to play this smoochy Sheldon Mopes character in a cynical way where you present it with almost a bit of snark and condescension towards the character from the performer, but Ed Norton plays it so genuinely and so optimistically that if you have somebody else in this role, the movie doesn't work. You need somebody who can sell that childlike sincerity and genuine innocence. You need someone who, when they tell you that putting alfalfa juice into orange juice will get you a real buzz and you believe it, that's the caliber of actor you need for this movie to work.
Okay, I've listened to both of your arguments. I've seen both movies in the past, not recently, but I have seen them. I'm going to need something a little outside of the box, but familiar to help make my judgment here. So I'm going to take a question that we got earlier. We had an episode a while ago about video game movies. I believe it was Double Dragon and Mortal Kombat. So if we were to turn your guys' movies into 8-bit Nintendo games, what would happen in your movie?
You know, I'm going to say it's going to be a lot like Bart versus the Space Mutants. You're not getting a real lot of depth here. There's a lot of on-screen comedy that you get from 8-bit. You're basically rolling around town, beating up mimes. This is what you're going to get out of Shakes the Clown, the video game.
Probably Tom Kenny as the boss at the end.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, in true edutainment fashion, a Death to Smoochie 8-bit game would be very similar to something like Oregon Trail. Except for instead of trying to cross the nation, you're trying to navigate the high-stakes world of the children's television industry, and you gotta take your boy Smoochie from the bottom to the top while avoiding all the mean, mean pratfalls that can get in his way.
So give me, what would a power-up be in a Death to Smoochie?
So game? If you're getting a little tired, you get some alfalfa sprouts, you're going to have a burst energy. You can move at double speed for a full 30 seconds.
Who would the end boss be?
Oh, the end boss. Well, it really depends on how you want to go with it. There's a couple different options. To me, I think the end boss has to be like an evil network executive. Like it's a character you create solely for the video game. But there's no reason
you
the end boss...
You clearly played some 8-bit Nintendo games too. They just make shit up.
Yeah, right? But there's no reason it couldn't just be Danny DeVito. I don't even need him in character. It can just be Danny DeVito.
You know what I see your video game more like?
I would love to hear it.
Mike Tyson's Punch-Out.
Oh, there's some fun to be had there.
Basically, round one is you're just dealing with the methadone clinic.
Right.
A couple rounds in, you're fighting...
Rainbow Randolph?
Rainbow Randolph. He's like King Hippo. He shows up a couple of times during the game.
Yeah. So Jon Stewart's maybe Bald Bull and... Rainbow Randolph is pissed.
And you got
Harvey Firestein.
Firestein, yeah. He's definitely going to be a boss at some point.
Oh, I thought I almost pitched him as the big boss in my version, but he'd work better as one of those intermediate bosses that feels like the big boss, but then it turns out there's a whole like six more levels left.
He's the one you have to get a Nintendo Power article.
Oh,
to
yeah. There's a cheat code that you
can. LBB then A.
You're trying to get your buddy's Game Shark for a night. Please, I just can't get past him.
You press select in between the rounds and like an alfalfa drink comes up. Yeah. Brings up your power. If I was doing a Death to Smoochie game, I would take the title and go literally with it. I would make Rainbow Randolph.
And you got to get Smoochie?
Yeah. And you got to get Smoochie.
See, I really like that, and I thought of something similar.
And at the end, you kill him. Like, that's how it works.
It's just, I would be a real hypocrite if I tried to pitch a game where you tried to kill Ed Norton at the end. I just don't have it in me to do that.
But it's great. Every time you try and nail Ed Norton, he gets
the dog
away.
From Duck Hunt laughs at you.
All right. So I list you guys' arguments. I've really considered this because I have fondness for both movies. Both movies have made me laugh quite a few times, although not a long time for Shakes a Clown. I just don't see it anymore. I haven't, until you even brought it up, I hadn't even thought of that movie for a while.
You know, and it was actually fairly difficult to find on the internet.
Yeah, I'd imagine it's I mean, it's kind of a negative comedy that wasn't huge when it came out, so I could imagine it's been lost to the ages a little bit. So I do want to say I appreciate that movie, but in the end, I got to go to Death the Smooch.
Yeah.
I mean, quite frankly, it's just like it's so many great performances that are wrapped fantastic. Up in this movie. And I got to say, Danny DeVito, like, I'm just a sucker for any of his movies. Like, his directed movies, they're all hilarious, and he's got that dark comedy
He's
down.
Got such an awesome sensibility.
Yeah, I kind of feel like Bobcat Goldthwait as a director, like, it was a great starting point, but I think he's gotten better.
He's definitely gotten better.
Yeah, so that's where I got to go. So in the end, having not seen Shakes the Clown for a long time, I'm going to give it a satisfactory because I remember laughing and remembering a couple scenes, but really only a couple. So I'll give it a satisfactory having not watched it for a while. Death to Smoochie, I got to give an excellent minus. It's really, really movie. Funny. The first time I watched it, I think I watched it like twice in 2 days. And I saw it 4 or 5 times the first year I saw it. And I've probably seen it like 10 times. Like, it's just a really, really funny movie.
Yeah, it's a cult classic. I would give it an excellent minus as well. I thought about giving it a straight excellent. The thing that knocks it down is, as great as Catherine Keener is in the movie, and she's fantastic, and she has some great dialogue, her character does not have much to do. She basically spends the first half of the movie as sort of like the roadblock in Ed Norton's way, and then spends the second half of the movie as his cheerleader.
Yeah, she's that classic example of and I think we talked with Aaron Donaldson about this. Maybe it was on Real Roulette. I don't remember if we talked about it in Box Office Battle or not, but like that classic woman character where when they're on it, like, they're just, like you said, a roadblock to the main character, and then they fall in love with them. Yep, like, they only serve to be an obstacle until they're a love interest. And of course, they got to fall in love with the main character.
And it's, I mean, Catherine Keener's great in the role. It's a really
She's
good performance.
Really good
she
at,
has
like,
some
snark.
Whip smart, yeah, the snark stuff. She doesn't sell the emotional stuff as well, but she's serviceable in that stuff. She gets some fun dialogue, especially when she gets to be snarky. She just doesn't have much of a plot, and it has to lose a point for that. You know, especially if you have an actress that, there's no reason to do that sort of wasteful female character anyway. But if you have an actress of Catherine Keener's caliber, give her something to do.
Yeah, this movie is really a boys' club when you break it down.
Yeah, honestly, the movie, you could probably cut that Catherine Keener character and split a lot of those things in other characters, and you could have probably been fine.
Yeah, I mean, I think the part where she is necessary is the doubting that the character's pure.
Is for real. And then seeing that he is.
But yeah, they could have cut her stuff down quite a bit, and would have serviced the movie better. I gotta agree with you on that.
But, I mean, it's only problematic enough to drop it from an excellent to an excellent minus in my eyes. So Shakes the Clown, I saw in middle school, and I don't remember a lot about it, but I do remember it changing both the way I thought of clowns, because I saw it probably about a year before I saw that movie. So
enlightened clowns.
Yeah, exactly. It actually most Shakes the Clown is not going to turn most people into clowns' favor. Did for me. Swung me back to pro clowns. I don't remember a ton of it, but I remember really enjoying it at the time. So based sort of on nostalgia and because I was not able to watch it for this. So based on nostalgia, the little bits I do remember, what you've described, and again, it brought me back on board with clowns. So I'm going to give it a strong satisfactory.
You know, it's funny you say that, because I think the last time I saw it, I was in middle school too. It had to have been around there. Like, is this like a 91, 92?
91. So.
Yeah, so there you go. Yeah, I saw it in 8th grade, I'm pretty sure.
I'll start out with Death the Smoochie. Straight up excellent.
It's a real great movie.
I rewatched it again the other day, and you do have some valid points. I don't knock that much off of it for her performance. I did have a thought about her, because her character is the one character I did have the most problem with, because, you know, all these other people are, I mean, she's just as evil as Jon Stewart was in the in the role, but she sleeps with the guy, and then, like, all of a sudden all's forgiven, and that was the one thing that, like, kind of had a problem with. Other than that, I mean, Steven Wright's performance was
hysterical.
I mean, perfect casting. The drug out, just
Michael Rispoli as the Michael Rispoli as the punch drunk boxer who with the personality of a 5-year old
who was beloved by the Irish mafia. I mean, there was just so much great comedy in that movie that I can't go any less than a solid excellent.
When people say cult classic, this is the type of movie they're thinking of.
Yeah.
Shakes the Clown, I'm going to have to give a needs improvement. It does not hold up well.
Yeah, that's what you're saying. I had to put in the nostalgia part. Yeah,
that means your argument worked on me, though, because you made me feel like it held up fine. So.
And there's, I mean, it's... There's parts of it that are there, but they just don't age well. I mean, I brought up the thing where, you know, children's clown thing isn't a thing anymore. I mean, So it just doesn't age well in my mind. So I'm going to have to say solid needs improvement. There, I actually fell asleep through about 20 minutes of the movie.
I chastise you, but I mean, I didn't see it. 25% of Highlander teams. Who am I to criticize?
I watched all of Death the Smoochie.
Oh, I intently watched Death the Smoochie because I watched both of them back to back.
Well, I can't believe we didn't even talk about the best scene in that movie where Robin Williams sets him up to look like a Nazi. That's the most hysterical thing, not just in that movie, in most movies.
Yeah. It is very interesting that you guys both picked a movie where Robin Williams is playing a clown of sorts, like a dark clown of sorts.
Who is a rival to the main... Yeah, there's a whole...
No. And she Shakes the Clown, he's not a rival. He actually, if I remember right, I think he serves to show Shakes the Clown that he was wrong about mimes, right?
Yeah.
Because as it like basically
oh, sure.
there's like a whole plot line there that mimes are basically the homosexuals of the clown community. And
1991, everybody.
right. But I mean, I thought it had heart the way they did it in a way because, like, Shakes realizes that he's totally wrong about it and backwards about it, right? Am I right?
Not to that level. There was a certain because they didn't really get into the mimes stuff when I was watching or sleeping, so it's not so much that he like really fouled the air. He's like, oh, well, I'm just not gonna punch mimes anymore. I still don't like them. I'm just not going to punch them in the park
anymore.
Right,
it's about tolerance, guys.
We learned a valuable lesson.
That's right. I would emphasize, though, because we're not giving a lot of love to Shakes the Clown right now, I would emphasize, if nothing else, to go on... It's got to be on YouTube. And look up a mime named Puberty.
Oh, God. That
because Robin Williams is this mime named Puberty. And I'm not going to, like, describe it. I think it should just be seen. So if you can find that clip,
women do something different.
Just check out that one. It's great.
Shakes the Clown is a great euphemism for masturbation.
All right. So fill those seats so we don't have to.
Hello, what can I do for you today?
Well, I am looking for Christmas presents for my family. Just, I really let it go this year. Do you have anything good for me?
Of course, the We Had a Good Life podcast, which you can find on the Not Safer Network.
A podcast? I guess I was thinking more like a Furby, maybe?
Maybe Montucky Skies is more up your alley.
Is that also a podcast? Because again, I'm looking for something a little more tangible.
Podcast? Why, speak no further. We've got Box Office Battle.
You know, I gotta say, I'm beginning to feel like you're not listening to me. Again, looking for gifts like I can put in a box or a bag and wrap them for my friends and family.
Perhaps shooting the show would be more your speed.
You know, work with me, not for me. Let's try to attack this as a team. Again, gifts, family.
Is your family into art?
Sure, yeah.
Well, then the Thin Man podcast would be right up your alley.
All right, do you have something that's not a podcast? Because this is a little frustrating.
Real Roulette isn't a podcast anymore, but we do have the archives available on the Not Safer Network.
I mean, it seems pretty clear at this point you have an agenda. You're not going to sell me the toy robot. You're not going to sell me the beautiful handbag. And you're not going to sell me that cool poncho. What are you going to sell me?
That's debatable. It's a podcast about arguing.
You know... I gotta say, at this point, I feel like I understand arguing. So I'm tempted, but again, not what I'm looking for.
So you're looking for something tangible that you can hold in your hands.
Ideally.
Well, why not the Not Safe for Network podcast, which you can hold in your hands on your iPod or MP3 player?
Sure, that counts.